Camp Hill to Latrobe, Altoona to Lafayette Hill. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, two state constitutional amendments have been proposed in an effort to reestablish the historic balance of power between the governor and the legislature. State Senator Ryan Aument is here with details. David Bradford is a direct descendant of William Bradford, the first governor of the Plymouth Colony set up when the Pilgrims landed in America. He is here to talk about the principles of self-government they established. And your Thanksgiving dinner is going to cost more as surging inflation has hit grocery stores. On this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity PA says this is a direct result of Biden administration policies. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Senator Ryan Aument in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The crowded Republican primary for governor of Pennsylvania got even more crowded this past week. A state Senate President pro tempore Jake Corman officially entered the race. Corman is the highest-ranking official in the state Senate and has represented a state college-centered district for the past 22 years. At this point, more than a dozen candidates have announced or are considering entering the race for what will be an open seat, as incumbent Governor Tom Wolf is term-limited and cannot seek re-election. In a major blow to the Democratic political structure in the city of Philadelphia, labor union leader and power broker Johnny Doc Dougherty has been found guilty of conspiracy charges, as has City Councilman Bobby Hennen. Dougherty was convicted of 8 counts, including conspiracy and wire fraud, while Hennen was also convicted on a bribery charge. Dougherty faces yet another trial on charges stemming from a lengthy FBI investigation that led to his indictment in 2019. Congressman Scott Perry, who represents a mid-state district, has been elected the new chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. Perry will assume the helm of the caucus, which is a powerful coalition of some 40 conservative members of Congress, which was highly influential when the GOP controlled the House. Democrats currently hold a slim majority, which is at risk in next year's congressional elections. The mask mandate for Pennsylvania school children is now set to expire on January 4th. That is the latest ruling from the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court. However, parents may want to keep those masks handy, as the Wolf administration, which imposed the mandate by regulatory fiat, is appealing the ruling to the state Supreme Court, which has a history of rubber stamping the governor's policies. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf has issued an historic number of executive orders and regulations that carry the force of law, bypassing the state legislature in the process. Now, House Speaker Brian Cutler and State Senator Ryan Aument have proposed 2 amendments to the state constitution to restore the balance of power between the two branches. Senator Aument represents the 36th senatorial district in northern Lancaster County. He is here to talk about the proposed amendments. Senator, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Senator, we're going to get into the specific details of the 2 proposed constitutional amendments, but first, go back over the last year or two and what has occurred with the Wolf administration that created the climate where these amendments are now necessary.
Well, we have seen a growing trend over the last number of years with this governor using the regulatory process and especially executive orders to take unilateral action, to take actions purport to have the force of law, to do that unilaterally, circumventing the will of the people as expressed by members of the General Assembly. And those executive orders with this administration are increasing at an alarming rate. 52, the Wolf administration has issued 52 executive orders where previous administrations issued an average of 16. Now, many folks will say, well, it's the pandemic. Well, the 52 executive orders that I just highlighted that the Wolf administration has issued, only two have been issued in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. So clearly what this administration is doing, they don't have the votes in the General Assembly to take some of the actions. You look in the regulatory space with Reggie, they don't have the support with the public. They don't have the support in the General Assembly. And so the governor's claiming executive power and enacting legislation, taking lawful action unilaterally. And our system was not designed to function that way.
Back in May, Ryan, voters approved two constitutional amendments to the Constitution, to state constitution, to rein in the governor's emergency powers. I gather from the fact that you're proposing additional amendments that that didn't quite get the job done?
Sadly, no. To your point, wish this step constitutionally wasn't necessary, because I think the law as it relates to executive orders, I think the executive order of the powers of the governor to act is clear in terms of the intent. But this governor, as he has done throughout his time in office, has overreached. And so Speaker Cutler and I are seeking to do is to follow up the message that the voters powerfully sent last May to limit the governor's emergency power, and to do this very same thing with the governor's ability to issue executive orders that purport to have the force of law, and ensuring that those are not in effect for more than 21 days. You see the parallel there, not in effect for more than 21 days unless extended by a concurrent resolution of the General Assembly.
Talk a little bit more about that specific amendment, Ryan. As we look at it, the governor does put out executive orders that have the force of law without having it go through the General Assembly?
That's exactly right. And historically, what you've seen governors do, and I will point out this is a problem, in my view, at the federal level as well, but what we have historically seen governors do is issue, and the intent is to issue executive orders that are administrative in nature, that affect the organization and the administration of a new governor's administration. This governor has overreached and has exceeded that original intent. So really what we're seeking to do, it's a package of two bills that seeks to restore the voice of people in their government decision-making process and reinforce the fragile balance of power as intended in our Constitution through two important amendments. So voters, should this pass, voters will have the opportunity to weigh in on two questions. The first, and I'll read this so I'm very specific. Number one, amending Article 4 to add a new section providing that any executive order or proclamation issued by the governor, which purports to have the force of law, that's the key phrase there, which purports to have the force of law, may not be in effect for more than 21 days unless extended by a concurrent resolution of the General Assembly. The governor's got to come back to the General Assembly to seek extension. Two, the second question amends Article 3, Section 9 to exempt the disapproval of a regulation by the General Assembly from the presentment requirement for the governor's approval or disapproval. What that means is, like the regional greenhouse gas initiative, what the governor is seeking to enter in unilaterally into this regional compact, which have, in my view, devastating consequences on Pennsylvania consumers and the energy industry here. In the future, should a governor present such a regulation to the General Assembly, that would not have to be presented to the governor for his signature or veto. If a majority of both houses were to vote against that regulation, then it could not proceed as a regulation. It could proceed through the legislative process, but not as a regulation.
Speaking of those regulations in the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, Senator, I believe at least the Senate, if not both houses, have passed a resolution disapproving those regulations, which really are not so much regulations, but a carbon tax. Is that something that, without this amendment, the governor has the ability to veto?
So in the future, the governor, if this constitutional amendment were to pass, if the governor were to seek such a change through regulation, then the General Assembly, just as we've done, we could reject that regulation, but it would not go to the governor for his signature veto. What the governor or any future governor would have to do is, if they were seeking such a dramatic change in economic and energy policy in Pennsylvania, as you've said, with devastating consequences, the governor would have to go through the legislative process. A bill would have to be introduced. It would have to go committee. It would have to be considered in committee. There would have to be opportunity for amendment and then considered in both chambers of the General Assembly. That's what the governor is seeking to avoid, this open and transparent process, the process for amendment and the up or down vote in the General Assembly. That would be truly binding. Now we're faced with this regulatory approval on Reggie facing a governor's veto of our action, and we would need two-thirds vote to overcome that.
Looking then at the process for this, we did approve, as mentioned earlier, two constitutional amendments back in May to limit the governor's emergency powers. What is the process by which these two amendments could be added to the Constitution, and where do we stand in that process?
Ultimately, the people will have the opportunity to decide. And perhaps I'm wrong, and perhaps the broader public and residents across the state do not believe that the governor has overreached his authority and there's no additional action required to rein in the executive. I don't believe that's the case. I think Pennsylvanians broadly believe that we need to restore an appropriate balance, constitutional balance of power. And so the General Assembly for a constitutional amendment would have to consider this change, this legislation, and favorably report, pass the legislation in two consecutive sessions. So we have another year, a little more than a year remaining in this legislative session for the House and Senate to consider this amendment, and then come back early next session in 2023, and should it be favorably voted upon again, it could get to the voters as soon as the spring of 2023. We're introducing, Speaker Cutler and I, companion pieces of legislation in the Senate and the House. The House is going to anticipate moving legislation, these questions, as early as this week. So I am hopeful that the General Assembly will take up the first consideration in this legislative session, which puts us on track for a 2023 consideration by the voters.
A number of these issues have ended up before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, Ryan, and we all know how they end up. The governor basically has the Supreme Court in his back pocket. In terms of these proposed amendments, relative to the state Supreme Court and the governor, they can proceed without approval from either, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And that, again, is why I think it's so important that we take these questions to the voters of this Commonwealth to consider. And again, to hear from the voters of this state as to whether or not they believe we need to take these steps to restore the constitutional balance of power. Because what we've seen over the last couple of years in particular has been the Supreme Court, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, time and time again, setting aside the Constitution, setting aside our laws, and upholding the power of the executive, the unilateral power of this governor to act. And last May, the voters rejected that approach, and I suspect with this question, they'll reject it again.
We have been talking with State Senator Ryan Aumont. He represents the 36th State Senate District, that in northern Lancaster County. And, Senator, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about these two proposed constitutional amendments and the other issues that you're working on, where can they go to find that information?
Best place to go is to my website at SenatorAumont.com, and you certainly can join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all at Senator Aumont.
State Senator Ryan Aumont. Senator, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
When the Pilgrims first landed in America, they had to decide how to govern themselves. Thus, Plymouth Colony was built on a foundation of God-given equal rights. David Bradford is a direct descendant of William Bradford, who was the first governor of Plymouth Colony. He is here to talk about its enduring importance. David, it is now Thanksgiving time, and the reason why we celebrate this holiday, among others, is because the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock and formed the colony, the first colony here in America. William Bradford, you are a descendant of his, was the first governor of that colony. So tell us a little bit about why those first colonists came here and the principles upon which they set up that very first colony.
It's a great story of the Pilgrims' history, and unfortunately, too many people aren't really that well informed of it. I know growing up, I went to a very good school in Michigan, and I just learned basically two things about the Pilgrims. One, they escaped England to seek religious freedom, and then number two, they suffered a very difficult first winter and served as an inspiration to others, period. That was the extent of what we learned about the Pilgrims. And of course, Thanksgiving, the holiday that they celebrate, that's been an attempt to sort of link us back to our roots and what the Pilgrims were really about. And the thing that I think is so important for people to understand is that the Pilgrims were an extremely religious religiously motivated people. They became very renowned even in their lifetime, which I was surprised to learn, because I always thought that I came later. They just were, you know, they wanted to get out of England and they were being persecuted and this sort of thing. But I also learned that they went to Holland for 12 years, which I thought they escaped England and came right to America. And what were they doing in Holland? You know, they had received and achieved their religious liberty by going to Holland. So why did they leave Holland? And so it just raised so many questions. And of course, being a direct descendant of Governor Bradford, I was very, very interested in learning more about what we know about the Pilgrims and what they were all about. And so it was very, very important to me to really look into what Bradford wrote. And I wanted to share his history in his own words. When you think about his diary, which is where we learn most of what we know about the early colony, his firsthand account, he and Governor Winslow, or Edward Winslow's accounts, are the basis of most firsthand information that we know. And one of the things that is so important for us to understand is that when he wrote this, he shared it as a historian, and he wrote in third person. And it was very hard, even me wanting to understand this, I found it very difficult to understand. It was only when I was able to sit down and I wanted to transcribe it in the first person, and I started taking his account and putting it into, instead of they and them, it was I and we, and I started sharing it as if I was William Bradford speaking. It came alive, and it just became so powerful when you realize what he thought was important to share with other people. And he took the time to write it down and make sure he could pass that on to the next generation. I just felt an obligation to be the mouthpiece for Governor Bradford and be able to share his history, because it is so important to our foundation of our country. There's a direct connection between what the Pilgrims, they're like the seed or the DNA that was planted, that became and grew into the American, what it means to be an American.
Talk for a minute or so, if you will, about the principles that that colony was founded on, and the principles that Governor Bradford and those early colonists established that ultimately became the bedrock for our entire national existence.
The basis and foundation of what they attempted to do was they were entirely intent on living out the New Testament church in their world. And they were committed to that fully, completely, 100%, they viewed the providence of God and what they should do, how they should live, was to model it after what the scripture says. And that's one of the things that most people have a hard time quite relating to, because they embodied faith. Like I said, they were renowned for it in their own time. So their foundation was to come here and to preach the gospel, basically, to the new world. That was one of their four motivations that Bradford actually wrote down. He actually enumerated them. He said, you know, when they left Holland, number one, number two, number three, and he said last but not least was the propagating of the gospel to the new world. So that was a very important foundational principle, was faith. And the other foundational principle was this idea of liberty and freedom. It was important that freedom was an individual liberty. It wasn't necessarily group liberty, but each person was accountable to God and accountable to living out the life that God had placed before them. And that was a primary motivation for their colony, how they treated their neighbors. This wonderful relationship they had with the Wampanoag Indians is lost on most Americans. They figure, they're being told anyway today, that the Native American and indigenous people and the Pilgrims just came to wipe them out, steal their land, and genocide was their motivation. And that's not true at all. I mean, the treaty that they established in the first spring after they had arrived, when they first met the Poconocut tribe, it was a treaty that they entered into that lasted over half a century. And it's the only treaty that has survived the lifetime of the two primary people who entered into that agreement. That treaty lasted the lifetime of the Massasoit Assiniboine on the Poconocut side, and Bradford and Winslow and Governor Carver. They all, it was over half a century. which is unique in American history.
Now, speaking of American history, unfortunately, a lot of it is not taught in public schools, and we've had various projects that have certainly distorted it. In an effort to set the record straight, you have established the 1620 experience. Tell us what that is and why it's important.
The 1620 experience is a series of episodes, 13 different episodes of 30 minutes apiece that actually go into and teach the history of the Pilgrims and really brings the truth versus the sort of the lie that we're being exposed to today. And we're doing this in not just in a lecture format or a video format, but we're trying to make it a multi-platform so it can be on social media. And these programs will be set up as webinars where people can attend, and we'll have video of showing and demonstrating and engaging people in the true history of the Pilgrims and this relationship with the Wampanoag Nation. And people can come and learn about it, but then also interact with myself and my son, who is also an educator and teaches this. So it's a wonderful platform for reaching out to that 12 to 25-year-old generation that really needs a good grounding and foundation in our American history, but also our founding history, which is the Pilgrim history that leads to the founding of our country.
And David, give us the website where folks can go to access the experience.
It's 1620experience.com. 1620, capital E-X, experience.com.
And we have been talking with David Bradford, a direct descendant of Governor William Bradford, who was one of the first individuals, along with a whole group of pilgrims, to land in this country and set up what ultimately became our national holiday that we're celebrating this week. And so we encourage you to go to the 1620experience.com. David Bradford, David, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Be prepared to shell out more dollars for your Thanksgiving feast, and you can thank the Biden administration for that. So says Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
In a recent Wall Street Journal editorial entitled Inflation and Building Back Worse, the board notes the current spike in inflation is no accident, but rather a result of reckless policies that squeeze the supply of goods and services. On November 10th, the U.S. Labor Department reported that consumer prices jumped 0.9% in October, or 6.2% from a year ago, and the fifth straight month higher than 5%. We know that most in Congress are far removed from the reality of the lot of their constituents, often making more than three times the median household income of those they serve. This holiday season, as we prepare to celebrate and gather with family, it's Americans who will be paying the inflated prices for their turkeys, up 10%, pies, and gifts. Americans for Prosperity prioritized our federal agenda early on in this Congress, spotlighting the need to stop the spending spree. Here in Pennsylvania, we focused on four members, U.S. Representatives Cartwright, Fitzpatrick, Lamb, and Wild. After tens of thousands of contacts into their offices were sent via both phone and email, and dozens of events held, all four chose to ignore the call of their constituents, voting yes on the first bipartisan physical infrastructure deal. But now, Speaker Pelosi is working the next infrastructure package, President Biden's Build Back Better legislation, that is comprised of, quote, human infrastructure goals. We will continue to pressure these four members who represent districts that warrant pause from their leaders in Washington when it comes to rubber stamping the Biden administration's priorities. Representing PA's 5th Congressional District, Representative Mary Gay Scanlon was an enthusiastic yes vote on the recent trillion-dollar infrastructure package. And one must wonder, has she visited any of the small businesses of her district recently? At John's Roast Pork in South Philly, the base sandwich price has been raised from $9.75 to $12. The Philadelphia Inquirer quoted owner John Bucci in their recent story, highlighting some of the cost increases of Philly favorites. Mr. Bucci said, "I'm ready for a nervous breakdown. Roast pork was 89 cents a pound pre-pandemic, and now it's $1.89. Cheese, onions, more than double. Chicken steaks, up to $3.65 a pound. Steak is way over $5 a pound. I put 3/4 of a pound of meat on my sandwiches. We're already at $7, without the wrapper, the labor, the store costs. Dude, I'm losing my mind." This is just one example of so many Pennsylvania voices that are struggling. It's not only fair, but it's necessary to ask, does our federal delegation simply not care about their constituents? Tidings of comfort and joy cannot be stomped out by Washington, D.C. This holiday season will bring long-awaited family and friend reunions. However, the discomfort Americans have felt at the gas pumps and checkout lines from Pittsburgh to Pottsville and Edinburgh to East Stroudsburg remains and could get worse. We ask that you visit americansforprosperity.ivolunteers.com and sign the letter "Inflation Hurts Americans," which states, "Dear official, everyday Americans, like me and my family, are feeling the impact of increased costs for household items. Inflation has already made virtually everything less affordable for my family, and the massive multi-trillion-dollar reconciliation bill that is being considered in Congress could make matters even worse. Americans cannot afford to continue seeing the prices of everyday goods get higher and higher. The reconciliation bill would be a disaster for American businesses, families, and the economy as a whole. Without your help, we cannot raise the chorus that's needed now more than ever. So please sign the letter and join us by scaling your voice." I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WMBS AM and FM in Uniontown, WRDV FM in Warminster, along with WRRN FM and WNAE FM in Warren, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.